Welcome to Clear Text. It's Friday, June 26th, 2026. I'm Alex Chen.
And I'm Jordan Reeves. Let's get into it.
Jordan, you wanted to lead with the Cisco SD-WAN story today, and I think that's the right call.
Yeah. So Google's Mandiant team published details on a high-severity flaw in Cisco Catalyst SD-WAN Manager that was being actively exploited as far back as March. The vulnerability wasn't publicly disclosed until June. That's a three-month dwell time, where attackers had free rein on one of the most widely deployed SD-WAN platforms in the enterprise. And the sophistication of the exploitation activity suggests this wasn't script kiddies. We're talking nation-state or top-tier criminal operators.
And this is the part that should land hard for anyone listening. If you patched the day Cisco disclosed, you were already 3 months late. The real action item here is retrospective investigation. You need to go back and look for indicators of compromise in your SD-WAN infrastructure from March forward. Patching closed the door, but someone may have already been inside.
Exactly. And this ties into the broader breach roundup from Bank Info Security this week. Mandiant's SD-WAN findings were part of a cluster that also includes three Ubiquity vulnerabilities under active exploitation, INC ransomware activity, and some interesting research on cross-cloud bucket hijacking. For security operations teams, this is a dense week. The Ubiquity flaws hit networking gear that's common in branch offices, so if you're running distributed infrastructure, check your exposure.
Good segue, because dense is the word for the threat landscape this week. Let's talk about the state-sponsored activity, because there's a lot of it, and it paints a coherent picture.
Three distinct stories, three different nation-state actors, all dropped on the same day. First, Google Threat Intelligence published a detailed write-up on Turla, the Russian FSB-linked group, deploying a new .NET backdoor called Stockstay. Primary targets are Ukrainian government and military, which is expected. What's less expected is the targeting of entities with ties to Italian foreign policy, which broadens the geographic risk profile significantly.
And for CISOs at organizations with government contracts or NATO-adjacent supply chains, this is directly relevant. Turla doesn't limit itself to Ukrainian targets. They follow the intelligence priorities of the Russian state. And right now, those priorities include fracturing Western European consensus. If your organization touches defense, diplomacy, or energy policy in Europe, you're in the aperture.
Second story. China-linked actors deploying a custom backdoor called TinyRCT against critical infrastructure in Southeast Asia. The custom tooling is the important detail here. When a threat group invests in bespoke malware rather than repurposing commodity tools, it tells you two things. They're well-resourced, and they care about operational security. They don't want to be detected, and they don't want the capability burned.
And for multinationals with operations in the region, this is a third-party risk story as much as a direct targeting story. Your Southeast Asian suppliers, your joint ventures, your regional data centers, they're all potential vectors. The pattern of Chinese APT activity against critical national infrastructure ahead of geopolitical flashpoints is well established at this point. We saw it before the Taiwan Strait tensions. We're seeing it again now.
And the third piece is the most visceral. Australia's intelligence services found what they described publicly as digital dynamite embedded on critical infrastructure networks. That's not analyst hyperbole. That's the Australian government using that language deliberately. At the same time, Japan's military discovered infected USB drives in active use within their defense ecosystem. These are allied nations in the Five Eyes and Quad frameworks, finding pre-positioned threats in their most sensitive environments.
Let me connect these three threads for the board-level audience. We are watching real-time preparation of the cyber battle space by multiple state actors simultaneously. Russia maintaining persistent access in Europe through Turla, China pre-positioning in Southeast Asian infrastructure, and allied nations discovering embedded threats they didn't know where they were. If you're a CISO at a critical infrastructure operator, this is the week you update your board on nation-state risk and make sure your threat model reflects the current geopolitical reality, not the one from 18 months ago.
Now, let's talk about some good news, which doesn't happen often on the show. Operation Endgame expanded this week. Europol and partner agencies dismantled the Amadei botnet and the Steeler-C credential theft malware operation. These were major malware-as-a-service platforms. Amadei was a loader botnet used to distribute secondary payloads, and Steeler-C was exactly what the name suggests, a credential harvesting operation at scale.
This is the kind of law enforcement action that actually moves the needle. These aren't symbolic arrests. These are infrastructure takedowns that force threat actors to rebuild. It doesn't eliminate the threat, but it creates friction. It raises the cost of doing business for cybercriminals. And if your organization was seeing Amadei or Steeler-C indicators in your environment, you should be tracking whether those command and control channels have gone dark and using that window to clean up any residual compromise.
Agreed. Credit where it's due. the sustained international coordination on Endgame has been impressive.
Let's shift to the supply chain and regulatory picture in Europe, because there's a report from Black Kite that quantifies something we've been talking about for months. They analyzed over 2,000 ransomware incidents across 31 European countries between January 2025 and April 2026. And the headline finding is that third-party suppliers have overtaken direct enterprise targeting as the primary ransomware entry point.
That's not a surprise to anyone who's been paying attention, but having the data is useful. It validates the investment thesis for vendor risk programs.
It does, and it makes the NIS2 and DORA compliance conversation much more concrete. Those regulations explicitly address supply chain security obligations. If your third-party risk program is still based on annual questionnaires and SOC 2 reports, you're not meeting the spirit of what European regulators are building toward. The Black Kite data gives you ammunition to go to your board and say, the regulatory pressure and the threat data are aligned. We need to invest in continuous vendor monitoring.
And speaking of regulatory movement, two governance stories were flagging. The FCC adopted new rules this week overhauling security requirements for national emergency alert systems and imposing federal security review for undersea cable providers. If you're in telecom or if your business continuity depends on submarine cable connectivity, which it does for most global enterprises, these rules affect your risk posture.
The emergency alert system piece is particularly interesting. The FCC is explicitly addressing the hijacking risk for national alert infrastructure. This is the kind of systemic risk that most CISOs don't think about until it's too late. And the undersea cable rules reflect the reality that those cables are strategic assets, not just commercial infrastructure.
Second governance item, DHS Secretary Mullen confirmed that the president has met with a likely CISA director nominee. And once confirmed, the agency plans to hire 600 additional staff. No formal announcement yet, but the signal is clear. CISA is going to ramp back up.
This matters for how enterprises receive threat intelligence, how KEV advisories get prioritized, and how sector-specific guidance evolves. A fully staffed CISA with permanent leadership is good for everyone. Watch this space.
Two more quick hits. Cyber insurance underwriters are tightening the screws again. Claims eligibility is increasingly tied to adherence to specific security controls, not just having a policy. Renewals are becoming de facto security audits. CISOs need documented evidence of resilience, not just assertions.
I've been saying this for 2 years. Your insurance renewal prep should look like your audit prep. Have your MFA coverage data, your backup testing results, your incident response tabletop records ready. Insurers are getting sophisticated about what they ask for, and exclusions are getting more specific.
And finally, the Linux Foundation launched Acrites, an industry-backed framework for coordinating open-source vulnerability remediation and disclosure. The explicit motivation is that AI is shortening the window between flaw discovery and exploitation, so the open-source ecosystem needs a faster, more standardized response process.
This is a software supply chain story. If your application stack depends on open-source components, and it does, then how those communities handle vulnerability disclosure directly affects your patching timelines. Acrites is trying to industrialize that process, and major tech companies and financial institutions are backing it. Worth tracking how it evolves.
So, Alex, stepping back and looking at the week, what's the threat?
The threat is convergence. The threat actors are converging on supply chains and pre-positioned access. The regulators are converging on accountability, whether that's NIS2, DORA, or the FCC. And the insurance market is converging on verifiable controls. For CISOs, this means the gap between what you tell your board and what you can actually demonstrate is getting smaller. Assertions without evidence are going to get you in trouble, whether it's with your insurer, your regulator, or the threat actor who's already in your supplier's network.
I'd add one thing. The Cisco SD-WAN story is the canary. 3 months of pre-disclosure exploitation on widely deployed infrastructure. If your detection capabilities aren't good enough to catch that kind of activity independently of vendor disclosure, that's the gap you need to close. Don't wait for the CVE. Assume someone already found it.
That's a great note to end on. That's Clear Text for Friday, June 26th, 2026. Show notes and links to every story we covered today are at cleartext.fm.
Have a good weekend. Stay sharp.
We'll see you Monday.